and good afternoon. It's Rob McClure here with you on this rather overcast and cold Monday. And, well, of course, it's time for our book reading, and we've been reading Ivanhoe. But before we go any further, a word from the people who help make our little radio station possible.
Our sponsor, IGA Braidwood, is an independent retailer supporting the local community of Braidwood and the surrounding villages.
They have a wide range of specialist foods, wines, beers and spirits.
They provide free delivery in the town of Braidwood.
And they still provide old-fashioned friendly service.
Located at 50 Wallace Street and open 7 days a week.
They can be contacted on 4842 2451.
Duller Curtains and Blinds, trusted for more than 50 years for Australian-made quality. We can enhance your indoor-outdoor lifestyle. Discover Australia's largest range of outdoor blinds and awnings and keep your home insulated from the elements with eco-friendly fabrics and easy-to-use automation. Experience a whole new level of service and book your free design, measure and quote today. The easiest way to upgrade your home. Duller Curtains and Blinds. Value in every dollar.
Your nearest store is at Batemans Bay at 21 Princess Highway, and you can contact them by phone on 4472 8033. A proud sponsor of Braidwood FM.
JG Earthworks is your one-stop shop for all your excavation needs. From big to small, Joel and his team do it all. Landscaping, backyard cleanups, roadworks and driveways, site clearing and levelling, dam cleaning and construction, motocross and supercross tracks. Check out his website at www.jgearthworks.com to get a full view of services available. Or call Joel on 0406 869 618 for a free quote and expert advice. Let JG Earthworks do your dirty work. JG Earthworks, proud supporter of Braidwood FM.
Looking for a building carpentry company for minor home refurbishments, commercial factory maintenance, farm infrastructure such as stables, yards and arenas?
Then call Peter at ECP, the experienced construction professionals with over 30 years of commercial and residential works throughout New South Wales.
Braidwood based and now servicing the coast of Canberra, Goulburn and Nowra.
Contact Peter for a chat about your next project on 0410 698 734.
ECP, a proud sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
And a big thank you to our sponsors. Well, we've been reading Ivanhoe, and we've reached the point where Loxley, the Black Knight, and, of course, Garth, aided by Cedric, who has now escaped, intend to attack. We know that Isaac is in the dungeon, about to be tortured if Dubuff ever gets back, and we know that Ivanhoe, badly wounded, is being cared for. We've met the old hag who was a princess in her day, watched her father and her brothers killed by Front de Boeuf's father. And we also know that Athelstan is still a prisoner, and of course Womba is with him. We continue on. De Bracy, look to the northeastern side where the walls are lowest. Noble Bois Guilbert, your trade has well taught you how to attack and defend. Look to the western side. I myself will take the post at the Barbican. Yet do not confine your exertions to any one spot, noble friends. We must this day be everywhere and multiply ourselves, were it possible, so as to carry by our present succour and relief wherever the attack is hottest. Our numbers are few, but activity and courage may supply that defect, since we have only to do with rascal clowns.
But, noble knights, exclaimed Father Ambrose amid the bustle and confusion occasioned by the preparations for the defence,
will none of you hear the message of the Reverend Father in God, Aymer, Prior of Jorvaulx? I beseech you to hear me, noble Sir Reginald.
Oh, go patter thy petitions to heaven, said the fierce Norman, for we on earth have no time to listen to... Oh, look, there, Anselm. See that seething pitch and oil are ready to pour on the heads of those audacious traitors. Look, look, the crossbowmen, lack not bolts. Fling about my banner with the old bull's head, and the knaves shall soon find with whom they have to do this day.
But, noble sir, continued the monk, persevering in his endeavours to draw attention, considering my vows of obedience, let me discharge myself of my superior's errand.
"'Away with this prating dotard,' said Front de Boeuf. Lock him up in the chapel to tell his beads till the broil be over. Ah, it'll be a new thing to the saints of Torquilston to hear aves and paters. They have not been so honoured, I guess, since they were cut out of stone. Oh, blaspheme not the holy saint, Sir Reginald, said De Bracy. We shall have need of their aid today, before yon rascal rout disband. I expect little aid from their hand, said Front de Boeuf, unless we were to hurl them from the battlements on the heads of the villains. There is a huge lumbering St. Christopher yonder, sufficient to bear a whole company to earth. The Templar had, in the meantime, been looking out on the proceedings of the besiegers with rather more attention than the brutal Front de Boeuf or his giddy companion. By the faith of my order, he said, these men approach with more touch of discipline than could have been judged, however they came by it. Look how dexterously they use every cover which tree or bush affords, and they don't expose themselves to the shot of our crossbows. I spy neither banner nor pennon among them, and yet I will gauge my golden chain that they are led by some noble knight or gentleman, skilful in the practice of wars. I see him, said De Bracy. I see the waving of a knight's crest and the gleam of his armour. Look, the tall man in black mail, who is busied marshalling, the farther troop of the rascal yeoman. By St. Denis, I hold him to be the same whom we call Lenore Fainant, who overthrew you, Front de Boeuf, in the lists at Ashby. So much the better, said Front de Boeuf, that he comes here to give me my revenge. Some hiding fellow he must be, who dared not stay to assert his claim to the tawny prize which chance assigned him. I should in vain have sought for him where knights and nobles seek their foes, and right glad am I he has here shown himself among that group of villainous yeomanry. The demonstrations of the enemy's immediate approach cut all further discourse off. Each knight repaired to his post, and at the head of the few followers whom they were able to muster, and who were in numbers inadequate to defend the whole extent of the walls, they awaited with calm determination the threatened assault. Chapter 28. Our history must needs reverse for a space of a few pages to inform the reader of certain passages material to your understanding of the rest of this important narrative. His own intelligence may indeed have easily anticipated that, when Ivanhoe sunk down and seemed abandoned by all the world, it was the importunity of Rebecca which prevailed on her father to have the gallant young warrior transported from the lists to the house which for the time the Jews inhabited in the suburbs of Ashby. It would not have been difficult to have persuaded Isaac to this step in any other circumstance, for his disposition was generally kind and grateful. But he also had the prejudices and scrupulous timidity of his persecuted people, and those were to be conquered. "Holy Abraham!" he exclaimed. "He is a good youth, and my heart bleeds to see the gore trickle down his rich embroidered hackaton and his corselet of goodly price. But to carry him to our house? Damsel, hast thou well considered? He is a Christian, and by our law we may not deal with the stranger and Gentile, save for the advantage of our commerce." "Speak not so, my dear father," replied Rebecca. "We may not indeed mix with them in banquet and in jollity, but in wounds and misery the Gentile becomes the Jew's brother." "I would I knew what the Rabbi Jacob ben Tudela would open on it," replied Isaac. "Nevertheless, the good youth must not bleed to death. Let Seth and Reuben bear him to the Ashby." "Nay, let them place him in my litter," said Rebecca. "I will mount one of the palfreys." "That were to expose thee to the gaze of these dogs of Ishmael and of Edom," whispered Isaac, with suspicious glance towards the crowd of knights and squires. But Rebecca was already busied in carrying her charitable purpose into effect, and listened not to what he said until Isaac, seizing the sleeve of her mantle, again exclaimed in a hurried voice, "Be it of Aaron! What if the youth perish? If he die in our custody, shall we not be held guilty of his blood and be torn to pieces by the multitude?" "He will not die, father," said Rebecca, gently extricating herself from the grasp of Isaac. "He will not die unless we abandon him, and if so, we are indeed answerable for his blood to God and to man." "Nay,"
said Isaac, releasing his hold. "It grieves me as much to see the drops of his blood as if they were so many golden byzants from my own purse, and I well know what the lessons of Miriam, daughter of the Rabbi Manassas of Byzantium, whose soul is in paradise, have made you skilful in the art of healing, and that you know the craft of herbs and the force of elixirs. Therefore do as your mind gives you faith to do. You are a good damsel, a blessing and a crown and a song of rejoicing unto me and my house and unto the people of my fathers." The apprehensions of Isaac, however, were not ill-founded, and the generous and grateful benevolence of his daughter exposed her, on her return to Ashby, to the unhallowed gaze of Brian de Bois-Guilbert. The Templar twice passed and repassed them on the road, fixing his bold and ardent look on the beautiful Jewess, and we have already seen the consequences of the admiration which her charms excited when accident threw her into the power of that unprincipled voluptuary. Rebecca lost no time in causing the patient to be transported to their temporary dwelling, and proceeded with her own hands to examine and bind up his wounds. The youngest reader of romances, of romantic ballads, must recollect how often the females during the Dark Ages, as they are called, were initiated into the mysteries of surgery, and how frequently the gallant knight submitted the wounds of his person to her cure, whose eyes had yet more deeply penetrated his heart. But the Jews, both male and female, possessed and practised the medical science in all its branches, and the monarchs and powerful barons of the time frequently committed themselves to the charge of some experienced sage among this despised people when wounded or in sickness. The aid of the Jewish physicians was not less eagerly sought after, though a general belief prevailed among the Christians that the Jewish rabbins were deeply acquainted with the occult sciences, and particularly with the Kabbalistical art, which had its name and origin in the studies of the sages of Israel. Neither did the rabbins disown such acquaintance with supernatural arts, which added nothing for what could ought add to the hatred with which the nation was regarded, while it diminished the contempt with which that malevolence was mingled. A Jewish magician might be the subject of equal abhorrence with a Jewish usurer, but he could not be equally despised. It is besides probable, considering the wonderful cures they are said to have performed, that the Jews possessed some secrets of the healing art peculiar to themselves, and which, with the exclusive spirit arising out of their condition, they took great care to conceal from the Christians among whom they dwelt. The beautiful Rebecca had been heedfully brought up in all the knowledge proper to her nation, which her apt and powerful mind had retained, arranged, and enlarged in the course of a progress beyond her years, her sex, and even the age in which she lived. Her knowledge of medicine and the healing art had been acquired under an aged Jewess, the daughter of one of their most celebrated doctors, who loved Rebecca as her own child, and was believed to have communicated to her secrets which had been left to herself by her sage father at the same time and under the same circumstances. The fate of Miriam had indeed been to fall a sacrifice to the fanaticisms of the times, but her secrets had survived in her apt pupil. Rebecca, thus endowed with knowledge as with beauty, was universally revered and admired by her own tribe, who almost regarded her as one of those gifted women mentioned in the sacred history. Her father himself, out of reverence for her talents, which involuntarily mingled itself with his unbounded affection, permitted the maiden a greater liberty than was usually indulged to those of her sex by the habits of her people, and was, as we have just seen, frequently guided by her opinion, even in preference to his own. When Ivanhoe reached the habitation of Isaac, he was still in a state of unconsciousness, owing to the profuse loss of blood which had taken place during his exertions in the list. Rebecca examined the wound, and having applied it to it such vulnerary remedies as her art prescribed, informed her father that if fever could be averted, of which the great bleeding rendered her little apprehensive, and if the healing balsam of Miriam retained its virtue, there was nothing to fear for his guest's life, and that he might with safety travel to York with them on the ensuing day. Isaac looked a little blank at this annunciation. his charity would willingly have stopped short at Ashby, or at most have left the wounded Christian to be tended in the house where he was residing as a resident, with an assurance to the Hebrew to whom it belonged that all expenses should be duly discharged. To this, however, Rebecca opposed many reasons, of which we shall only mention two, that had peculiar weight with Isaac. The one was that she would on no account put the phial of precious balsam into the hands of another physician, even of her own tribe, lest that valuable mystery should be discovered. The other, that this wounded knight, Wilfred of Ivanhoe, was an intimate favourite of Richard Coeur de Lion, and that in case the monarch should return, Isaac, who had supplied his brother John with treasure to prosecute his rebellious purposes, would stand in no small need of a powerful protector who enjoyed Richard's favour.
"You are speaking but truth, Rebecca," said Isaac, giving way to these weighty arguments. "It were an offending of heaven to betray the secrets of the blessed Miriam, for the good which heaven gives is not rashly to be squandered upon others, whether it be talents of gold and shekels of silver, or whether it be the secret mysteries of a wise physician. Assuredly, they should be preserved to those whom Providence has given them, and him whom the Nazarenes of England called the Lion's Heart. Assuredly, it were better for me to fall into the hands of a strong lion of Idumea than into his, if he shall have got assurances of my dealings with his brother. Wherefore I will lend ear to your counsel, and this youth shall journey with us to York, and our house shall be as a home to him, until his wounds are healed. And if he be of the lion, if he be his friend, and the lion heart shall return to the land, as is now noised abroad, then shall this Wilfred of Ivanhoe be under me as a wall of defence, when the king's displeasure shall burn bright against your father. And if he does not return, this Wilfred may nonetheless repay us our charges when he shall gain treasure, yes, treasure, by the strength of his spear and his sword, even as he did yesterday and this day also. For the youth is a good youth, and keeps the day which he appoints, and restoreth that which he borrows, and he succours the Israelite, even the child of my father's house, when it is encompassed by strong thieves and sons of Belial." It was not until evening was nearly closed that Ivanhoe was restored to the consciousness of his situation. He awoke from a broken slumber under the confused impressions which are naturally attendant on the recovery from a state of insensibility. He was unable for some time to recall exactly to memory the circumstances which had preceded his fall in the lists, or to make out any connected chain of the events in which he had been engaged upon the yesterday. A sense of wounds and injury, joined to great weakness and exhaustion, was mingled with the recollection of blows dealt and received, of steeds rushing upon each other, overthrowing and overthrown, a confused fight. An effort to draw aside the curtain of his couch was in some degree successful, although rendered difficult by the pain of his wound. To his great surprise, he found himself in a room magnificently furnished, but having cushions instead of chairs to rest upon, and in other respects partaking so much of Oriental costume that he began to doubt whether he had not, during his sleep, been transported back again to the land of Palestine. The impression was increased when, the tapestry being drawn aside, a female form dressed in rich habit, which took more of the Eastern taste than that of Europe, glided through the door which it concealed, and was followed by a swarthy domestic. As the wounded knight was about to address this fair apparition, she imposed silence by placing her slender finger upon her ruby lips, while the attendant, approaching him, proceeded to uncover Ivanhoe's side, and the lovely Jewess satisfied herself that the bandage was in its place and the wound doing well. She performed her task with a graceful and dignified simplicity and modesty, which might, even in more civilized days, have saved to redeem it from whatever might seem repugnant to female delicacy. The idea of so young and beautiful a person engaged in attendance on a sickbed, or in dressing the wound of one of a different sex, was melted away and lost in that of a beneficent being contributing her effectual aid to relieve pain and to avert the stroke of death.
Rebecca's few and brief directions were given in the Hebrew language to the old domestic, and he, who had been frequently her assistant in similar cases, obeyed them without reply. The accents of an unknown tongue, however harsh they might have sounded when uttered by another, had, coming from the beautiful Rebecca, the romantic and pleasing effect which fancy ascribes to the charms pronounced by some beneficent fairy, unintelligible indeed to the ear, but from the sweetness of utterance and the benign aspect which accompanied them, touching and affecting to the heart. Without making an attempt at further question, Ivanhoe suffered them in silence to take the measures they were thought most proper for his recovery, and it was not until these were completed and his kind physician about to retire that his curiosity could no longer be suppressed. "Gentle maiden," he began in the Arabian tongue, which his eastern travels had rendered him familiar, and which he thought most likely to be understood by the turbaned and caftaned damsel who stood before him, "I pray you, gentle maiden, of your courtesy." But here he was interrupted by his fair physician, a smile which she could scarce suppress, dimpling for an instant, a face whose general expression was that of contemplative melancholy. "I am of England, Sir Knight, and I speak the English tongue, although my dress and my lineage belong to another climate." "Noble damsel," again the Knight of Ivanhoe began, and again Rebecca hastened to interrupt him. "Bestow not on me, Sir Knight," she said, "the epithet of noble. It is well you should speedily know that your handmaiden is a poor Jewess, the daughter of that Isaac of York to whom you were so lately a good and kind lord. It well becomes him, and those of his household, to render to you such careful attendance as your present state necessarily demands." I know not whether the fair Rowena would have been altogether satisfied with the species of emotion with which her devoted knight had hitherto gazed on the beautiful features and fair form and lustrous eyes of the lovely Rebecca, eyes whose brilliancy was shaded and, as it were, mellowed by the fringe of her long silken eyelashes, and which a minstrel would have compared to the evening star darting its rays through a bower of jasmine. But Ivanhoe was too good a Catholic to retain the same class of feelings towards a Jewess. This Rebecca had foreseen, and for this very purpose she had hastened to mention her father's name and lineage. Yet, for the fair and wise daughter of Isaac, she was not without a touch of female weakness. She could not but sigh internally when the glance of respectful admiration, not altogether unmixed with tenderness, with which Ivanhoe had hitherto regarded his unknown benefactress, was exchanged at once for a manner cold, composed, and collected, and fraught with no deeper feeling than that which expressed a grateful sense of courtesy received from an unexpected quarter and from one of an inferior race. It was not that Ivanhoe's former carriage expressed more than that general devotional homage which youth always pays to beauty, yet it was mortifying that one word should operate as a spell to remove poor Rebecca, who could not be supposed altogether ignorant of her title to such homage, into a degraded class, to whom it could not be honourably rendered. But the gentleness and candour of Rebecca's nature imputed no fault to Ivanhoe for sharing in the universal prejudice of his age and his religion. On the contrary, the fair Jewess, though sensible, her patient now regarded her as one of a race of reprobation, with whom it was disgraceful to hold any beyond the most necessary conversation, ceased not to pay the same patient and devoted attention to his safety and convalescence. She informed him of the necessity they were under of removing to York, and of her father's resolution to transport him there and tend him in his own house until his health should be restored. Ivanhoe expressed great repugnance to this plan, which he grounded on unwillingness to give further trouble to his benefactors. "Was there not," he said, "in Ashby or near it, some Saxon franklin or a wealthy peasant who would endure the burden of a wounded countryman's residence with him until he should be able to gain and bear his armour? Was there no convent or Saxon endowment where he could be received?
or could he not be transported as far as Burton, where he was sure to find hospitality with Waltoff, the abbot of St. Withold's, to whom he was related?
Any, the worst of these harbourages, said Rebecca with a melancholy smile, would unquestionably be more fitting for your residence than the abode of a despised Jew. Yet, Sir Knight, unless you would dismiss your physician, you cannot change your lodging. Our nation, as you well know, can cure wounds, though we deal not in inflicting them. And in our family in particular are secrets which have been handed down since the days of Solomon, and of which you have already experienced the advantage. No, Nazarene, I crave your forgiveness, Sir Knight. No Christian leech within the four seas of Britain could enable you to bear your corselet within a month.
And how soon will you enable me to wear it? Said Ivanhoe impatiently.
Within 8 days, if you will be patient and comfortable to my directions, replied Rebecca.
By our blessed lady, said Wilfred, if it be not a sin to name her here, it is no time for me or any true knight to be bedridden. If you accomplish your promise, maiden, I will pay you with my cask full of crowns, come by them as I may.
I will accomplish my promise, said Rebecca, and you will wear your armour on the 8th day from now, if you will grant me but one wish in the stead of the silver you have promised me.
If it be within my power, and such as a true Christian knight may yield to one of your people, replied Ivanhoe, I will grant your wish, quickly, thankfully.
Nay, answered Rebecca, I will but pray of you to believe henceforward that a Jew may do good service to a Christian without deserting either blessings of the great Father who made both Jew and Gentile.
It were sin to doubt it, maiden, replied Ivanhoe, and I repose myself on your skill without further scruple or question, well trusting you will enable me to bear my armour on the 8th day. And now, my kind leech, let me inquire of the news abroad. What of the noble Saxon Cedric and his household? What of the lovely lady?
He stopped, as if unwilling to speak Rowena's name in the home of a Jew.
Of her, I mean, who was named queen of the tournament, and who was selected by you, Sir Knight, to hold that dignity with judgment which was admired as much as your valour, replied Rebecca.
The blood which Ivanhoe had lost did not prevent a flush from crossing his cheek, feeling that he had incautiously betrayed his deep interest in Rowena by the awkward attempt he had made to conceal it.
It was less of her I would speak, said he, than of Prince John, and I would know somewhat of a faithful squire and why he is not here now?
Let me use my authority as a leech, answered Rebecca, and ask you to keep silence and avoid agitating reflections. Why, well, I will tell you of what you wish to know. Prince John has broken off the tournament, and he set forward in all haste towards York with the nobles, knights, churchmen of his party, after collecting such sums as they could wring by fair means, or foul, from those who are esteemed the wealthy of the land. It is said he designs to assume his brother's crown.
Not without a blow struck in his defence, said Ivanhoe, raising himself upon the couch. If there were but one true subject in England, I will fight for Richard's title with the best of them. Aye, one to two in his just quarrel.
But that you may not be able to do, said Rebecca, touching his shoulder with her hand. You must now observe my directions and remain quiet.
True maiden, said Ivanhoe, as quiet as these disquieted times will permit, and of Cedric and his household.
His steward came but a brief while since, said the Jewess, panting with haste to ask my father for certain monies, the price of wool, the growth of Cedric's flocks, and from him I learned that Cedric and Athelstane of Königsberg had left Prince John's lodging in high displeasure and were about to set forth on their return homeward.
Went any lady with them to the banquet? Said Wilfred.
The Lady Rowena, said Rebecca, answering the question with more precision than it had been asked. The Lady Rowena went not to the Prince's feast, and, as the steward reported to us, she is now on her journey back to Rotherwood, with her guardian Cedric, and touching your faithful squire Garth.
Ah! Exclaimed the knight. You know his name.
But you do, he immediately added, and well you may, for it was from your hand, and as I am now convinced from your own generosity of spirit, that he received but yesterday 100 zecchins.
Speak not of that,
said Rebecca, blushing deeply. I see how easy it is for the tongue to betray what the heart would gladly conceal.
But this sum of gold,
said Ivanhoe gravely. My honour is concerned in repaying it to your father.
Let it be as you wish, said Rebecca, when 8 days have passed away, but think not and speak not now of anything that may retard your recovery.
Be it so kind, maiden, said Ivanhoe. It were most ungrateful to dispute your commands, but one word of the fate of poor Garth, and I have done with questioning you.
I grieve to tell you, Sir Knight, answered the Jewess, that he is in the custody by order of Cedric, and then, observing the distress which her communication gave to Wilfred, she instantly added, but the steward Oswald said that if nothing occurred to renew his master's displeasure against him, he was sure that Cedric would pardon Garth, a faithful serf and one who stood in high favour, and who had but committed this error out of the love that he bore to Cedric's son. And he said, moreover, that he and his comrades, and especially Womba the jester, were resolved to warn Garth to make his escape by the way, in case Cedric's anger against him could not be mitigated.
Would to God they may keep their purpose, said Ivanhoe. But it seems as if I were destined to bring ruin on whomsoever has shown kindness to me, my king by whom I was honoured and distinguished. You see that the brother most indebted to him is raising his arms to grasp the crown. My regard hath brought restraint and trouble on the fairest of her sex, and now my father, in his mood, may slay this poor bondsman, but for his love and loyal service to me. You see, maiden, what an ill-fated wretch you labour to assist. Be wise and let me go, lest the misfortunes which track my footsteps like slot-hounds shall involve you also in their pursuit.
Nay, said Rebecca, your weakness and your grief, Sir Knight, make you miscalculate the purpose of heaven. You have been restored to your country when it most needed the assistance of a strong hand and a true heart, and you have humbled the pride of your enemies and those of your king, when their horn was most highly exalted, and for the evil which you sustained, see you not that heaven has raised you a helper and a physician, even among the most despised of the land? Therefore be of good courage, and trust that you are preserved for some marvel which your arm shall work before this people. Adieu. And having taken the medicine, which I shall send you by the hand of Reuben, compose yourself again to rest, that you may be more able to endure the journey of the succeeding day. Ivanhoe was convinced by the reasoning, and obeyed the directions of Rebecca. The draught which Reuben administered was of a sedative and narcotic quality, and secured the patient a sound and undisturbed slumber. In the morning, his kind physician found him entirely free from feverish symptoms, and fit to undergo the fatigue of a journey. He was deposited in the horse litter which had brought him from the lists, and every precaution was taken for his travelling with ease. In one circumstance only, even the entreaties of Rebecca were unable to secure sufficient attention to the accommodation of the wounded knight. Isaac, like the enriched traveller of Juvenal's 10th satire, had ever the fear of robbery before his eyes, conscious that he would be alike accounted fair game by the marauding Norman noble and by the Saxon outlaw. He therefore journeyed at a great rate, and made short halts and shorter meals, so that he passed by Cedric and Athelstane, who had several hours the start of him, but who had been delayed by their protracted feasting at the convent of St. Withold's. Yet such was the virtue of Miriam's balsam, or such the strength of Ivanhoe's constitution, that he did not sustain from the hurried journey that inconvenience which his kind physician had apprehended. In another point of view, however, the Jew's haste proved somewhat more than good speed. The rapidity with which he insisted on travelling bred several disputes between him and the party who he had hired to attend him as a guard. These men were Saxons, and not free by any means from the national love of ease and good living, which the Normans stigmatised as laziness and gluttony. Reversing Shylock's position, they had accepted the employment in hopes of feeding upon the wealthy Jew, and were very much displeased when they found themselves disappointed by the rapidity with which he insisted on their going. They remonstrated also upon the risk of damage to their horses by these forced marches. Finally, there arose betwixt Isaac and his satellites a deadly dreadful feud concerning the quantity of wine and ale to be allowed for consumption at each meal. And though thus it happened that when alarm of danger approached, and that which Isaac feared was likely to come upon him, he was deserted by the discontented mercenaries on whose protection he had relied, without using the means necessary to secure their attachment. In this deplorable condition, the Jew with his daughter and her wounded patient were found by Cedric, as had already been noticed, and soon afterwards he fell into the power of De Bracy and his confederates. Little notice was at first taken of the horse litter, and it might have remained behind but for the curiosity of De Bracy, who looked into it under the impression that it might contain the object of his enterprise, for Rowena had not unveiled herself. But De Bracy's astonishment was considerable when he discovered that the litter contained a wounded man, who, conceiving himself to have fallen into the power of Saxon outlaws, with whom his name might be a protection for himself and his friends, frankly avowed himself to be Wilfred of Ivanhoe. The ideas of chivalrous honour, which amidst his wildness and levity never utterly abandoned De Bracy, prohibited him from doing the knight any injury in his defenceless condition, and equally interdicted his betraying him to Front de Boeuf, who would certainly have had no scruples in putting him to death under any circumstances, because he was the rival claimant of the fief of Ivanhoe. On the other hand, to liberate a suitor preferred by the Lady Rowena, as the events of the tournament and indeed Wilfred's previous banishment from his father's house had made matter of notoriety, was a pitch far above the flight of De Bracy's generosity. A middle course between good and evil was all which he found himself capable of adopting, and he commanded two of his own squires to keep close by the litter and to suffer no one to approach it. If questioned, they were directed by their master to say that the empty litter of the Lady Rowena was employed to transport one of their comrades who had been wounded in the scuffle. On arriving at Torquilston, while the Knight Templar and the Lord of that castle were each intent upon their own schemes, the one on the Jew's treasure and the other on his daughter, De Bracy's squires conveyed Ivanhoe, still under the name of a wounded comrade, to a distant apartment. This explanation was accordingly returned by these men to Front de Boeuf when he questioned them why they did not make for the battlements upon the alarm. "A wounded companion," he replied in great wrath and astonishment. "No wonder the churls and yeomen wax so presumptuous as even to lay league before castles, and that clowns and swineherds send defiances to nobles, since men-at-arms have turned sick men's nurses, and free companions are grown keepers of dying folks' curtains, when the castle is about to be assailed. To the battlements, you loitering villains!" he exclaimed, raising his stentorian voice until the archers around rung again. "To the battlements, or I'll splinter your bones with this truncheon!" The men sulkily obeyed, that they desired nothing better than to go to the battlements, providing Front de Boeuf would bear them out with their master, who had commanded them to tend the dying man. "The dying man, knaves?" rejoined the Baron. "I promise you we shall be all dying men if we do not guard the castle more stoutly, but I will relieve the guard upon this cat of companion of yours. Here, Ulfred, hag, fiend of a Saxon witch, hear me not? Tend this bedridden fellow, since he must needs be tended, while these knaves use their weapons. Here be two arblasts, comrades, with windlasses and quarrels. To the barbican with you, and see you drive each bolt through a Saxon brain." The men, who, like most of their description, were fond of enterprise and detested inaction, went joyfully to the scene of danger as they were commanded, and thus the charge of Ivanhoe was transferred to Ulfred or Ulrica. But she, whose brain was burning with remembrance of injuries and with hopes of vengeance,
was readily induced to devolve upon Rebecca the care of her patient. Well, that's where we've reached today in the story of Ivanhoe. The castle is about to be attacked. Ivanhoe is slowly recovering. Rebecca is caring for him. Isaac is still in the dungeon. Athelstane's probably still eating. And, of course, Cedric is now with the rebels. And who is the Black Knight? I guess most of you have guessed. Until next Monday, keep well, Braidwood.